podcast that you never made a deal with. We're also the show that didn't make the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, even if you round down, but we do provide an Asian perspective into the galaxy far, far away. I'm your host, Bria, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian and Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
On today's episode, we're talking about Captain Cardinal, so sit back and enjoy the ConjiCast. And hey, guys, I hope none of you forgot about us since we said we were technically taking November off, which we did, and then work schedules kept bumping recording back, so now it's mid-December, and we're all fine here now, thank you. How are you?
I got sent on a work trip literally 3 days before we were supposed to record. That was great.
It kind of was, though, because I hadn't gotten to reread Phasma yet.
That's true. I sort of forgot how cardinal he was to the story. But I did read the book. See, that doesn't work as well, because then it just makes me... Never mind.
It does. I think you disowned yourself a little bit. It's okay, yeah. Though. Because we're back, guys. Puns and all, apparently. So, let's jump right into it with... And then there's this, in which we actually have good things this month. And I'm so excited about this.
Good things, plural.
Yes. Plural is great. So the first one is that the Golden Globe nominations came out the other day. So Sandra Oh is one of the hosts of the ceremony. And then she was also nominated for lead actress in a drama for her role in Killing Eve. Crazy Rich Asians, which, you know, I still adore and need to buy on DVD ASAP, got nominated for Best Musical or Comedy, and Constance Wu was nominated for Best Lead Actress. And then Darren Criss was nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Limited Series or Motion Picture Made for Television for Assassinating Gianni Versace. So yay! I'm glad Crazy Rich Asians got nominations. I would have been so sad if it hadn't.
Hooray!
Like, awards recognition is really good in making sure that people and projects get cast and greenlit in the future, so this is fantastic news.
Yeah. Also, this is not in the notes, but I was reading a review of that Mary Queen of Scots film the other day, the one with, like, Margot Robbie in it, which I have no interest in seeing because it looks like they're just messing with Tudor history. But apparently Gemma Chan is in it. They race blind casted it, and I kind of almost wanted to go see it then, but I'm not sure I can sit through the not good Tudor England-ishy stuff.
Yeah.
But yay, Gemma Chan. So maybe I'll watch it when it comes up on HBO Go. And then, in plural things, since apparently we have three today, Jay, do you want to take this next one, since I know you're excited about it?
Yeah, sure. So, just announced, I think this last month, is a new Disney Junior show called Mira Royal Detective. It's a kid show with an all-Indian cast. The actors announced so far are Frida Pinto, Hannah Simone, Cal Penn, Jamila Jamil, Utkarsh Ambudkar, and Aparna Nancherla. And then the main character is being played by a kid named Lena Ladnier. It looks like it's a French name, but she's Indian. And she's playing Mira, who is a young commoner who gets appointed royal detective after solving a mystery involving a young prince. And it's set in a Indian-inspired fantasy kingdom, which is pretty cool. And it looks like it's coming out in 2020.
Ooh. How excited are you for this, Jay? I feel like it has you written all over it.
I mean, it's one of those things where you give me royalty, and then you give me also, like, just being able to see folks who look like me, and then even justifying it to, like, other people who normally aren't into royalty stuff. It's, like, everything I want.
What if Mira ends up, or whoever this young prince is, what if both of them end up at Disney World and you can do meet and greets there?
Well, I have a record of... situations where I get photographs and then it becomes a minor thing on Twitter.
Can confirm.
It wasn't just a minor thing. Don't downplay yourself, Jay. It was a beautiful, incredible moment that I'm so glad I got to witness. But yeah, so we're excited about happy things. And I'm really excited that Jamila Jamil in particular is in this because I adore her on The Good Place. And if you're not watching The Good Place, you're wrong.
And she plays the best character on the show, by the way.
Yes, she does. Brian, have you watched that yet? Because you should.
I have not. I need to.
First two seasons are on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually,
so,
could I plug one thing before we move on?
Plug away.
I am absolutely loving She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, which features a couple notable Asian voice actors, Karen Fukuhara as Glimmer and Sandra Oh as Castispella. So, Glimmer's one of the central characters. Really enjoying it, and I highly recommend you watch it.
You didn't tell me there were Asian voice actors?
It totally slipped my mind. I meant to gush about that on Twitter, but kept getting sidetracked.
Brian, all I knew is that it was gay.
Oh, and it is exceptionally gay.
Ah, okay.
And it has royalty in it.
Really, what else do we need? Gay, Asian, and royalty. Just write that on my tombstone. Anyways, any more plugs? Any other good things that people have? Or, like, are we gonna... I feel like if we say anything more good in this episode, that means January is going to be a cluster.
I don't want to tempt fate.
All right. So today's episode is about Cardinal, but we actually wanted to circle back to our episode a couple months ago and talk about Resistance a little bit. We're not going to go too in-depth or anything, and we're also not going to talk in-depth about Kaz yet because we are saving him until we have at least like one season to really... deep dive and everything. But yeah, so real quick, thumbs up or thumbs down so far, guys?
Thumbs up.
I'm really enjoying Resistance a lot.
Thumbs up from me too. Question is, what do we think of Kaz? And wow, I am so out of practice with this podcast thing, but what do we think of Kaz?
I really like Kaz. Kaz is kind of like the anti-Filoni lead. Which is kind of a fun breath of fresh air for Star Wars animation. I like that he's so earnest and that he's always trying to do right, but is allowed to be fallible and to have people and himself call himself out.
Yeah, he's a klutz, but he tries really hard and his heart is in the right place. And I think that sort of helps mitigate, I think, even for the people in the show, like the other characters who think he's really, really annoying, they also recognize that, hey, you know, he's a cool guy. He wants to do good by people, even though he's the worst spy in the universe.
I feel so bad for him. It's not his fault. I mean, the fact that he's a giant klutz is his fault. But the poor boy was taken from, you know, the New Republic Starfighter group and said, hey, you should be a spy. And I don't think Poe really gave him spy training. So I'm just like, what is he supposed to do?
Give him a better cover identity and something he doesn't know how to do, like mechanics.
Oh, Poe. This is why the Resistance fails. So what else? Any other... Resistance or Kaz thoughts you guys want to share?
I love that there isn't a white dude in the main cast.
Yes. And the only white dude I can think of was played by Elijah Wood.
Acceptable.
Yeah. How about you, Jay?
I guess about Kaz specifically, you know, I do see some folks who sort of are a little annoyed by him, and I get it. You know, he's a character in a kid's show, and he's sort of earnest and kind of annoying, but you know, it's annoying in a good way, if that makes sense, at least to me. And obviously everyone's mileage may vary, but I have not been annoyed by him yet. I actually find it endearing how often he screws up. So yeah,
I think there was a couple times in like episodes 2, 3 and maybe 4 where I was just, it felt a little bit over the top to me at times where, with Kaz's antics, where I wanted to be like, Honey, please calm down. But what I like is that over the last 10 episodes, we've really seen him grow. And I think that's it's really important to see character growth while he still gets to maintain that goodness, like that pure goodness in his heart without having to become like jaded or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm seeing a defined arc with Kaz that wasn't readily apparent for other characters in other shows, so I really appreciate kind of how they're approaching him.
I'm really hoping we get to meet his parents in the next half of the season before, you know,
They get Hosnian primed.
Yeah.
Just give me some senators and some fancy outfits. That's all I want.
You got Leia in the last episode.
No, but I want Papa Ziono.
Well, we'll write the creators of Resistance and let them know, Jay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, so I think, we got any last thoughts about our poor sweet boy Kaz, who's just doing his best. Actually, no, I do want to say something. I love how excited Christopher Shawn is about this, about the role and to be in Star Wars.
I love that so much.
Like, I think every single Sunday he's always posting about the show. He's always hyping up his fellow castmates and saying, hey, you know, this episode we have so-and-so character played by this actor. It was so great, you know, getting to work with them. It just makes me, his general enthusiasm just delights me. And I hope the fandom embraces him.
I can't wait to see him at Celebration.
Oh, no.
You know he's going to be there. He will totally be there.
Oh, no. I mean, yay, but Brian, I may need you to rescue me if I swoon a little bit. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Are you certain about that?
Okay. You have to watch the Wizzy Bennett Diaries, okay? He's so good as Bing Lee, and he's just charming. And from everything I've heard, he's very, very nice. And it's not fair when people are good-looking and nice and also talented.
Yeah, that's really not fair at all, is it?
No, and he knows, you know, like, I think it was Jonah Marie told me when she went to the press event they had in, before the show premiered, she said he talked a fair bit about representation and recognize, you know, what it means for everyone. And I just love that he's so aware and he's having so much fun. And I love Kaz. I will protect my good soft son. Okay. We should talk about a different good soft boy now, shouldn't we?
We should, yes. We should move on to the next good soft boy.
Nancy's going to be so happy when she hears us saying that. About soft boys. Okay, so on to our main event. We are talking about Captain Cardinal this month, which has me incredibly excited because I love that man more than I ever expected to love any stormtrooper. And for those who don't know why we're talking about him, per the word of God, who in this situation is Delilah Dawson, she pictured Kalani Robe, I think is how he pronounces his last name, when she was writing Cardinal. I totally missed this, and I blame it on the fact that his face is kind of in shadows in the really cool poster art that they have hanging up, or that they have put in one of the books that I have hanging up behind me. And I almost fell off my bar stool when Delilah told me this.
Bless you, Delilah.
Actually, Jay, you were there, right?
I think, yes. Yeah, I was. I think so.
Yeah. In New York. So you can confirm that I basically fell off my bar stool. Yes. Not because I was drinking. There just happened to be seating in the bar. But yeah, so that's why we're talking about him. He is our good Hapa son. What were your guys' initial reactions when you learned this?
Mine wasn't as profound as yours because I hadn't read the book yet.
But you read the book now, right, Brian?
Yes, I have read it now.
There was no poke, poke, poke peer pressure going on at all, right?
Not at all, and I didn't procrastinate at all reading it. I totally did not wait until yesterday to finish the book.
It's okay, Jay did too. but aside from that, like, okay, granted, we all know I'm very dramatic and I'm just going to fall off bar stools with delight at these things. But did you expect that we were going to get a stormtrooper, like, who was not a white guy, even in the Age of Finn and everything?
You know, honestly, no, I didn't. And I suppose it's just because I'm kind of trained that way by a lot of Star Wars media over the last few decades. Just expect stormtrooper. Okay. Default white guy. That's sadly the first thing that comes to my head, so I did not expect it at all.
Yeah, for me, and I know we're going to get into his actual description in the book in a second, but, you know, when I first read the book, I noticed that, you know, oh, it's not white skin, that's interesting, because, you know, we see it coming up more and more often in the new canon books, but it didn't register to me that he might be of an Asian background, and I didn't think about it until we learned about it, and I thought, oh, this is a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I think, in my defense, I was reading the book at between the hours of, like, 4 and, I don't remember, a.m. in the morning during Dragon Con.
Got to stop doing that to yourself.
Well, if Del Rey would stop putting out books, like, at midnight during Dragon Con, I would stop doing that to myself. Actually, here, I'll just jump down to that bit, the description of him, because I sort of added it in here. It says, I think it's coming from Vi's point of view, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
He's maybe 40, although the lines on his face and the distance in his dark brown eyes suggest that he's already lived a lifetime. His skin is golden tan with freckles and darker patches that speak to years of sunburn. Smile lines crinkle at the corners of his eyes and lips, which, now that I read it, I don't know how I missed it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's right there.
Oh, shame, Bill.
I mean, we talked about this in previous episodes, right? Like, how do you signal this in text when the word Asian isn't available to you? And I guess golden tan is a good way of doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like how they described how Claudia Gray described Carice back in Bloodline.
Yeah, similar.
Which I like it. Like that to me works as a descriptor. So I'm like, and the whole thing, you know, with the freckles and all, I'm like, oh, there's the mixed part. I get it. But yeah, so good old Cardinal. He starts out as one of those Jakku orphans who we met at Empire's End, who Brendel Hux took off the planet. And back then his name was Archex. And then the First Order gave him the operating number of CD0922. And he trained, became a good little stormtrooper, and then Brendel, who is the absolute worst, eventually gave him the name Cardinal, cool armor and a cape, and the rank of captain. So is there anything that stood out to you guys about, like, I want to go into the whole indoctrination of stormtroopers later on, but was there anything that stood out to you, like, when we were getting his history, which was about, I think, about a third of the way through the book?
Yeah, I mean, he's associated with sort of just straight up service and loyalty, and he's like personally loyal to Brendel. Like, Brendel was the guy who took him off the planet, and he defined everything in his existence by that personal level of loyalty. And I wondered if that affected how he saw the First Order and like everything about his character, because I think we even get this from Vi, but he's like a good guy for a bad guy, I guess, is the way I'd describe him.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah, he's one of those actually sympathetic antagonists. That's so hard to write, but this was executed so well.
Yeah, and so he was... I almost feel like we just have to... A part of me wants to just skip down to the stormtrooper part. But so he used to be in charge, or he was in charge of the entire stormtrooper program at first, after Brendel gives him the captain rank and everything. And it was more of the boots on the ground sort of way than how Brendel, Hux, and then later Armitage were in charge of it from, you know, the lofty up high planning everything. At least he was until Phasma came along in her ill-fitting armor and was given command of the older half. So he kept the new recruits and the kids. And he was also stripped of his title of being Brendel's personal guard. So something that stood out to me when I was reading it was how much he genuinely cared about the cadets who are under his command. And, you know, screw it. Let's just jump down. Let's talk about the indoctrination stuff.
Excellent.
It's a mess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not great, Bob.
Yeah. Because, okay, so here's what gets me is, like you guys were just saying, he's not a bad guy. And what stood out to me when I was rereading it this time was when he first, you know, when they first capture Vi, Cardinal talks the bad guy talk. Like, you know, he calls her rebel scum or whatever. And it's just, not impressed with her at all because she's just some rebel. He's very much, you know, first order to the letter. And then he takes the helmet off. And then we get to know him a little more. And he feels very... He feels human. And you can understand why he would be so, like, so in favor of the First Order.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot going on here. Because, one, you know, he was this person who was abandoned on Jakku. And so he sees this kind of thing happening to kids all across the galaxy, which is why he wants to care for them. And then in his First Order indoctrination, in these nightly morale sessions that they have, he sees what's happening to the galaxy. And I guess, I mean, if I'm connecting the dots here, it looks like he's seeing what happens to other people, what happened to him, that people are being left behind, that the Republic is letting people suffer and live in chaos. And he has this, at one point, political discussion with Vi where he's like, you know, well, the senators and the lobbyists, they control everything. They don't care about the little people, but the First Order is going to swoop in. We'll bring in equality. We'll make life better for everyone. Like, he really believes in that stuff. And I think he's projecting what happened to him and what Brendel lifted him from to be happening to the whole galaxy. And he doesn't want that to happen to people.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's the Empire except on steroids as far as the training program goes. What about you, Brian?
You're right that the way he interacts with these cadets is fascinating. Very much one part of his upbringing on Jakku. It's in, to me, what was interesting is that he didn't let that horrid upbringing turn him into a terrible person with dealing with these cadets. He came out of it a more nurturing person, which I think is it's similar to Rey in kind of a way there. I love it when you get a little more of the nature versus nurture thing going on there, where we see here in these interactions with the cadets that he is a good person who is principled and moral, just happened to wind up in the First Order, though.
Yeah, there's even, I think it's Armitage at one point, says something to him about how he wouldn't, you know, how Cardinal wouldn't want his little ones given to Phasma's control. Because I think it's very clear that people know, like, Phasma is awful and would not be as nice, or not necessarily nice, but would not actually care about the cadets as and the kids as much as Cardinal does. I think it's interesting that even the higher ranking officers picked up on that.
Yeah, definitely.
I struggle so much with the whole indoctrination thing because the stormtroopers, they're not, especially in the First Order, you know. Yeah, we see them doing typical villain stuff in the movies and all, but I have to, they're not bad people. Do you know what I mean?
There, like, there's
I feel
nothing
awful saying this.
Well,
but
there's nothing about them that makes them inherently bad. There's nothing in their nature that makes them inherently bad. It's how they were nurtured that is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, they go through the, you know, the nightly morale sessions that are mandatory, where they're told, you know, how awful the Republic is and how chaotic everything is and how the First Order exists to make everything right. And I doubt most of them know, you know, Kylo Ren murdered a bunch of Jedi kids, or that they're, or what Starkiller Base is probably for, up until the point when Armitage makes it go boom.
I mean, or if it is, and this is something that Jason Fry's Edge of the Galaxy books, or Servants of the Empire books, rather, played into a little bit, because it tied slowly into the Hux training program, or at least the beginnings of it, is how the steps to becoming evil are sort of slow and so methodical that you don't even notice them. And so you're taught that what you're doing will be good, and then you do a little moral compromise and a little moral compromise. Maybe at one point you might shoot one civilian at one point in your career, and then it builds and builds and builds, and then pretty soon you're shooting a whole village of innocents with Kylo Ren because he ordered you to, and that's where it goes. And by the time you've crossed that line, it doesn't even feel like a line to you because you've already done all those other steps along the way.
This is why I love Cardinal so much, though, because the first time he's confronted with that moral line and he is staring it down, it completely changes his game plan and it completely changes his views on the First Order. His thoughts on the First Order changes. He doesn't change.
Yeah. Well, he changes a little bit.
Well, his morals aren't compromised.
No, that's true. And I can't help but think about the line where he thinks about how, you know, he's only killed someone. He's only killed people he's been directly ordered to kill. Like, he's not, and how he's in total contrast to Phasma like that, who just will be like, all right, that's fine, we'll kill people.
Right, Phasma's like, let's do live fire training exercises, that's the only way to get people's blood up, and Cardinal's like, you can't do that, that's terrible, that's brutal, we shouldn't ask them to kill unless there's a mission.
Yeah. Oh, Cardinal. And actually, I think all of this only serves to make both Cardinal and Finn more extraordinary.
Agreed.
Yeah, and not because, you know, they turned traitor, but because they were able to turn against the programming and everything. And we don't know that. Like at the end, Cardinal hasn't joined the Resistance. He can't stay where he is anymore. Which I think is an interesting distinction to make.
Right. I mean, he knows enough that Armitage, Hux, and Phasma aren't who they say they are, and they're not living up to what he thinks the First Order was supposed to be. So he's able to get at least a disconnect between them, and that something's gone wrong there.
Oh, hold on. Let's be very clear. Armitage Hux is exactly who he says he is. Armitage makes he might have been a little dramatic about faking sadness over Brendel's death, but really, can you blame him?
Oh, he's the galaxy's biggest fraud.
You leave my son alone. You leave my son and his black silk robe alone.
By the end of the story, he might be left alone.
Yeah, his boyfriend's gonna die. It's fine. Anyways, oh my god. I thought I was gonna be able to get through this episode with not detouring to the ice blue couch and the black silk robe.
That's
and I did it anyways.
Cute, Bria. That's cute.
I can't help it that Delilah Dawson wrote the two most beautiful chapters in existence. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Vi, essentially, and how, or rather not so much about Vi, but how things change for Cardinal once he starts interrogating her, which when I was reading it this time, I was kind of like, huh. It's really convenient. There's this big meeting tomorrow, and they just happen to capture Vi, and Cardinal just happens to be the one of the people who's there. And he just happens to know who she is. But I kind of was like, eh, whatever. Because he starts out, you know, flat out torturing her, which is morally wrong, I'll grant you that. But I thought the build of sort of, I don't even know what to call it, what there was between them.
Meeting of the minds, maybe? Like, they were both trying to, like, get each other's measure, I guess, through that whole interrogation process.
It was a battle of wits and strategy between the two of them that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, because I almost want to say trust, like, to the point, you know, by the end, there is a little bit of trust between them, but that doesn't even feel like it encompasses it correctly.
Yeah, it's definitely not, trust isn't the right word, but I don't know, it almost feels like there's a begrudging respect that they have for each other.
There you go, that's it. Yeah. And I liked it because, she's smart. She kind of Scheherazades her way through everything and carefully tells, you know, each little story and drags it out to the point where that she knows this is how she's prolonging her life, but she's also telling him what he wants to and what he needs to know, for the most part.
And also framing it in a way that, you know, makes it easier to reach him and almost humanize him, too.
Yeah, I thought it was... I thought it was very interesting. And actually, no. So I'm curious as to how much the Resistance actually knows about the First Order at this point. Because she knew who Cardinal was.
Right. She'd heard of him and knew... Like, she knew who he was before he identified himself.
Yeah. I mean, well, the emergency brake armor gave it away.
Yeah.
What's what I mean, but she knew of the existence of a stormtrooper with red armor.
Yeah.
I feel like the Resistance would... no information about the key players who are high enough profile that's just hard to keep them under wraps, but they likely have no clue the scope of the First Order.
Yeah, and the last episode of Resistance backs you up, definitely backs you up there.
Yeah.
Which actually, my assumption is that this book takes place before Resistance.
That's kind of the read I got, yeah.
But yeah, so I thought it was interesting. Let's go. Okay. Sorry. My brain is not working tonight. I kind of want to go back to how the relationships, plural rather, that Cardinal seems to have with both the Huxes. And I think Brian, I think it was you who was touching on this before. With Brendel and how he trusted him, or was that you, Jay?
That was Jay.
Jay, that was you. Talk a little more about that.
Well, I mean, so Brendel was the guy who raised Cardinal out from the mire, from Jakku, and sort of did for him what Cardinal is doing with the kid stormtroopers, and Cardinal felt a lot of loyalty to Brendel, a lot of gratitude, and he felt proud to like serve him, be his bodyguard, and a lot of what seems to be driving Cardinal through this story is his remembrances and not just like his own morals about the First Order, but his remembrances of Brendel and trying to figure out what really happened to him.
I can't help but think I know triangle usually gets associated with the word love triangle, but it's not accurate here. But the triangle relationships between Cardinal, Brendel, and Armitage, because to me, it seems like it felt like Brendel, up until Phasma arrived, treated Cardinal like almost like more of a son than he did Armitage, even though Armitage was the one who was raised up of being like, oh, you have to listen to him, you have to follow him. Somehow I doubt Brendel ever referred to poor Cardinal as being thin as a slip of paper and just as useless.
Right, it was like, I mean, it ties along well with our first introduction of Armitage in the Aftermath books, where he was called, like, his heir and stuff like that. So Brendel's like, you know, you have to obey him when it's his time, but he doesn't have the same respect and affection for him even that he does for Cardinal.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I just got the vibe that Cardinal deep down thought that Armitage was just never worthy of his father's legacy.
Yeah, I can buy that.
Yeah.
Which almost, like, to me, that doesn't even... It's not even so much a comment on Armitage as it is...
The loyalty to Brendel?
Exactly, how much he revered him, even though we all know Brendel Hux is the actual frickin' worst.
The worst.
And I think, isn't that one of the things that actually Hux Jr. actually says to him, like, you didn't know what my father was really like?
Yes. Yes. Hold on, now I want to open the book back. Really, I'm shocked my book doesn't just fall open to these pages. This is a shock. Because I thought, yeah, those two chapters were very interesting. And I thought you could also tell very much, even if you hadn't known, but just by reading those two chapters, how much of a history there was between both Armitage and Cardinal. Because part of it made me, when I was reading it, I was like, how he spoke to him sort of made it feel like like, Cardinal expected Armitage to respond to what he was saying about Phasma.
Right, to feel about it as the same way he did about Brendel being betrayed and murdered and that kind of stuff.
Or to at least give him the courtesy of believing him, because, you know, they went through stuff together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I swore I wasn't going to make this too much about Armitage. I swore. I just love both my sons so much. But yeah, so after he talks to Armitage that first time, he goes back, and then Vi tells him a second story, and then he gets brushed off and denied entrance to that big meeting. And that's when he breaks a little bit. I thought that bit was almost as telling, just as telling about his character as everything else. Because what happens to a character when you take away something that they believed in so much, and how they react to it, is always fascinating to me. And Cardinal does not handle it terribly well.
No, he does not.
He forgets to shave in the morning on purpose because he's hungover. What a disgrace he's become to the First Order.
He's never been hungover before. That poor boy.
And 2 days in a row, he has to eat in his own room because he can't take off his helmet in front of his kids.
Oh, Cardinal. Honey.
Buddy.
Oh.
And to top it off, Phasma's posters all across the walls of the mess hall. It's terrible. Like, that poor guy.
Oh, God, it really is. Yeah, which actually just brings back to the thing, how the kids all idolize her. Like, she's their idea of being this big hero. And Cardinal's just, like, their dependable dad.
And it's just, he wants to protect them from her. And, like, you know, he's like, she shouldn't be your hero. She will disappoint you and she will hurt you, and I want to make sure that doesn't happen.
Oh. Because he knows what it's like to have his heroes broken before him. Not say his heroes, but to have everything. Oh, Cardinal baby. But he still cleans up properly, and when he goes to fight Phasma, which is not a good idea, but he does it anyways.
Not his best idea.
Well, what else? It was not a good idea, but at the same time, I kept thinking, I don't know what other course of action he could have possibly taken while still being him.
His only other option would have been to take Vi's offer and escape right there and then with her. But that wasn't in the cards for him. He could never have brought himself to do that on his own.
Yeah, because he still believes. I think a part of him still does believe in the First Order at that point. He may not believe in his leadership, but he had to at least try and take Phasma out.
Yeah, he was so mired in protocol. Like, he didn't want to go beyond his chain of command to get her in trouble. But then that moment where Phasma turned her back to him and called him a coward, he just snapped and he had to fight her.
Oh, baby. Baby, you try so hard. I thought that said a lot about him, because he knew he wasn't going to win. Like, he heard Vi's story about how Phasma had murdered her way through basically her entire life. And he had to know she was better trained than he was.
Oh, he knew he was going to die going into that fight.
And I think that says a lot about him, that he knew it was going to go poorly, but he did it anyways, and he told Vi he was leaving the door open and to count to 1,000 before she left, but he never expected her to come after him.
Oh no, not at all. I mean, he definitely went into that fight knowing that the likeliest outcome was he was going to die.
Oh, yeah. Which brings us to the question of, what do you guys think is next for him? Because, you know, Vi rescues him and takes him with her. And the plan is to go back to Parnassos and, you know, rescue Siv and her kid. But what happens after that?
I I think they might.
Canto Biten rescues the orphans and creates an independent strike force that saves the resistance in episode 9.
Oh.
I think he goes on a little bit of a tour with Vi through the galaxy to see what it's really like out there.
Yeah, because I noticed this time something I hadn't picked up before was that she's not actually formally a member of the Resistance or anything.
Just a hired intelligence merc.
Yeah, who has no interest of working for the First Order.
Yep.
And did you guys pick up in Woman of the Galaxy and Vi's?
Sure did.
Mm-hmm. Where it mentions Batu and Galaxy's Edge very specifically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All I'm going to say is that if there's someone around there who's wearing pieces of red stormtrooper armor, sure would be convenient.
Oh, 2019, you can't get here soon enough.
Brian, if it's true, you know I'm going to cry in the middle of Disney, right?
Oh, I'm well aware you will.
Like, you and Nancy will just have to be like, it's fine. She's on the ground. Don't worry about it. She'll be fine. It's cool. I'm not even sure necessarily what I want. Like, I would love to see him in Galaxy's Edge, obviously. But I don't know how I feel about him actually joining the Resistance. But I really like Jay's idea now about him.
You know, he strikes me, if I can pull a little Legends comp, as a little bit of a Rogress. Who can't abide what the Empire or First Order really is when it becomes apparent to him, but can't join the Republic either.
I like that. Because how do you break forth from 30 years of conditioning?
I mean, you don't do it very quickly or easily.
I mean, he always saw himself as saving the kids. He can keep doing that. He just doesn't have to wave a flag while he does it.
Cardinal doesn't really feel like the flag-waving type.
Well, no, but you know what I mean? He doesn't have to do it with affiliated with the side.
Yeah. I really want to see him and Finn meet, though.
I honestly think that the likely outcome is Cardinal just goes mercenary.
But he can still meet Finn at some point.
He can still meet Finn at some point, and it would be great, and I want that to happen.
He also needs to keep his helmet.
Yes.
Which, I realize this time, they made it a point that, like, she puts his helmet back on him as she wheels him out. And I'm like, good. Good. That's nice, pretty, shiny armor. He should absolutely get to keep it. Because this is what I care about, First Order armor. yeah. Mostly, though, I think I hope we get to see him again. I think he's too interesting of a character for us to only get this one book. I would actually be really interested if we go back in the past to see, because I think, and it's not really a secret, that I would love to get a book about Rey Sloane's First Order.
Yes.
Too soon.
It's been a year and a half. Get over it. I think it would be great to see Sloane and Cardinal interact, because you know they must have at one point. Like, if Brendel made Cardinal his personal guard, then you know Sloane was not going to just give him free reign of all the Stormtrooper stuff. You know she was over there, like, checking up on him.
I mean, there's a reason he invoked her name, to threaten Armitage.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's fascinating, though, because Sloane beat the shit out of Brendel. So... huh. I think way too much about the First Order and the power dynamics. Way too much.
Yep. You think about the First Order too much? Never.
I just love my sons, the good soft ones, and the trash ones, and our Empress Rey Sloane. Oh, boy. All right, before I go too deep into that, Jay, do you want to cover your art corner?
Sure. So... this one was an interesting one. I thought his Cardinal's red armor is the most artistically visible thing about him. And in the story, it's explained that he was given the red armor as a mark of distinction to make him stand out. Brendel Hux even sort of joked about his name as in a potential pun that, you know, I'm going to name you Cardinal because you're Cardinal to me. And Cardinal himself makes the connection to the Red Bird during his reminiscences about that. And I thought it was interesting that it was supposed to be a gift to Cardinal, but it's also a sign of Brendel Hux sort of underlining his own importance, because who else do we associate with having bodyguards who wear red? Well, the Emperor and his royal guard, and Brendel Hux likes to gallivant around in the Emperor's yacht. Looking up the history of the royal guard costumes, looks like the Return of the Jedi costume designer, a guy named Rodas Gemero, basically designed the Red Guards to stand out and characterize the Emperor by their mere presence. The fact that he had these guards that stand out from normal stormtroopers tells you a lot about the Emperor himself. And Snoke's Praetorians do the same thing to him by inference and association to the Emperor. So what does this tell us about what Brendel thinks of himself? Well, clearly he thinks of himself very, very highly.
Huh. I hadn't made the Royal Guard connection before.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, I have to 501st nerd out for a second. And I want to point out something about the armor, which is that his armor is supposed to be, and I asked Del Rey about this at one point, it's supposed to just be a red version of the standard stormtrooper armor, albeit with a cape that goes the opposite way as Phasma's. Whereas Phasma's armor isn't just chrome, but a lot of the parts are different about it, which I thought was interesting.
Well, that makes sense in story too, right? Because Brendel Hux gave Cardinal the armor, but Phasma had to go out to the yacht and make it herself. So I guess Phasma's armor being literally a custom job fits perfectly.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. Because she used her armor as the base for the fabrications. Like her stormtrooper armor as a base for the fabrication. So it's not so much that it's custom as so much as she chose to be custom, whereas he stayed visually distinct, but also the same, if that makes sense.
So he fits in with the First Order, she doesn't.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Also, I'm now curious as to whether or not Major Von Reg in Resistance with his red TIE pilot uniform has any connection here.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And his absolutely gorgeous tie, too.
It's a very pretty
tie.
That
is a very pretty tie.
The first thing I can compliment about the First Order.
Their TIE Interceptor variants are pretty?
Yeah. That's how you get my attention.
Always on brand, Jay. Always on brand. Okay, so we're going to move down to the Tell That to Kanji Cast section. I think we actually answered Diana's first two questions, but she asked us, did your perceptions of Cardinal change over the course of the story? Which I guess we didn't necessarily answer that, but did they?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was a very well-defined and well-done arc, so my thoughts about him evolved as the arc went on.
Yeah, I think not just as it went on, but also when I was rereading it the second time now for this podcast, you know, the first time I read it, he sounded just like he was a First Order true believer, a zealot, and nothing more. But then connecting the dots, like we talked about during this episode, with his background and the kids and his personal loyalty, that adds a lot more nuance to his character and makes him a lot more interesting.
I think that mostly covers it for me. And then, of course, you know, me finding out he was Hapa. You want to make me love a character, just tell me they're Asian or they're half Asian, and I'll adore them. They'll be mine. I will adopt them. And then Diana's second question was, what do you think he's up to now? Which I think we mostly covered. And then Nancy asks, why is Cardinal such a good soft boy?
I think we just had about a 30-minute discussion on that. He's very true to his morals.
Do you think he and Del Mico would get along?
I think they would, and I think if they ever had the opportunity to cross paths, Del would say you have the chance to be better.
Aww.
He could have been a little nicer about the senators, though. Just saying.
Oh, Jay. Jay, never change. Diana also asks us, do you think Vi teaches Cardinal to knit?
I think she attempts to, but gets super frustrated.
Jay?
I don't understand the question.
Do you not know what knitting is?
I know what knitting is. I
don't know what there is to not understand.
I mean, I can't process this. I mean, maybe that might be Cardinal's reaction to just what's going on here now. What is happening?
You know what? Actually, hold on. I'm going to look at this scientifically because, you know, Vi's not very good at knitting, but Cardinal's a military man, and yes, they don't necessarily have to press all their uniforms, but I feel like most military people do at least learn the basics of sewing, like for how to put a button back on or how to fix basic repairs or to, you know, how to sew your teammate's guts back in, or I don't know what the war movies have taught me. So I feel like Cardinal actually knows how to sew, and they is not too far off from sewing. So I feel like, you know, he needs a hobby that's not teaching children how to shoot other people for a little bit while he's trying to adapt to his new life. So yes, I think Vi does teach Cardinal how to knit. And he's good at it because it's all about patterns, right? And repetition.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't actually knit, so I don't know. I'm just making it up. But
I'm always going to nitpick.
Jay, you don't get to say you don't understand the question and then make that pun. Why are you like this?
I don't know, but I'm glad.
Oh, boy. Okay. And then John asks us, what Cardinal as a young kid adventures would you most want to read?
Boy, I don't know, but a Servants of the First Order series could be fun.
Ooh. Like set in the first couple years after Jakku?
Mm-hmm.
So he'd be like, what, 14, 15 then?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
That would be neat. I almost feel like I sort of already answered this one, you know, wanting to see him interacting with Sloane. Although he was probably like, what, 10 or 11 when he gets picked up?
I think so, somewhere in there.
Yeah. And I don't particularly want to read young kid adventures for Cardinal since they would just be Archex starving on Jakku.
That, yeah, that's just depressing.
Yeah. Oh! What if he meets Rey the same time he meets Finn?
Ooh. That could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I wonder if they ever went, if the First Order ever went back to Jakku and scooped up more orphans.
I bet. I think there's a decent chance that happened. Jakku was just as backwater enough that no one would notice.
Luke Skywalker did say that really is nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, what about you?
You know, when we're talking about young adventures in the First Order, I just can't help but think of all the other kids in the training program picking on Armitage Hux, and if we got to see that in a young Cardinal story, I'd be down for it.
Hmm. Okay, I have to do that thing where I mentioned a fanfic. And I should warn people right now, yes, it is a Kylux fanfic. Yes, it is pretty awful. I mean, not the writing, but, like, the subject matter gets pretty tough at times. But it's a fascinating fic. It's called Landslide. It's on AO3. You can find it. And it's all about, like, Hux, both Huxes and Cardinal with the side of Kylo, and then like all the relationships between them, and like how awful Armitage is to Cardinal, and I've kind of accepted it almost as headcanon. And there's your ConjiCast fanfic recommendation, since that's apparently what I do.
Brilliant.
Just be careful, it might become a thing.
Fanfic recommendations?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing though. You guys made me lead host, and I rate the show notes. So I'm not going to make it a thing.
She's got you there, Jay.
That's the downside of giving her power.
Unlimited power? Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to grant you the Palpatine comparison.
Oh, fine.
I'd never live it down.
Ugh, it's treason, then.
It's the treason for the season.
Okay, Jay.
Wrap this up before he makes more puns.
No, I'm going to make Jay give us a very insightful thought about Cardinal to make up for that very bad pun. And it can't be a pun.
Vi is the first person to show interest in him as a person since Brendel Hux.
Continue.
So part of why she was able to convince him to bring out his human side is because she tapped into what originally brought him out of his misery in the past, caring about him and thinking about him as a person and wanting to, you know, take him somewhere better. So in this case, out of the First Order, just like Brendel took him out of Jakku.
Huh. Okay. We accept your debt as paid. For now. Okay. So I was going to wrap it up there, but then a thought occurred to me was that a lot of times we hear in fandom that people don't like these stories about, quote unquote, the bad guys. And while Phasma's name is on the book and it is about her, it's also just as much Cardinal's story. And I kept drawing parallels in my mind to Inferno Squad. So what do you guys think about stories like this and where we see these people who aren't bad people, who aren't necessarily bad people on the other side, and them being more humanized and given depth and such?
Well, crisis of faith and crisis of conscience stories are classics for a reason. And I think when people say that they don't like these quote-unquote bad guy stories, what they're really saying is they're personally bored with a classic storytelling device. But that classic storytelling device is something that a Hapa character doesn't often get in Western media. So for me, it has value. It has a lot of value just for that.
I also think this is a different kind of story than a straight up, Darth Vader story or Tarkin story, where we have two unmitigated villains doing bad things and, you know, we're reading about it. And that might not be some people's cup of tea. I mean, that's perfectly fine. But I don't know if I'd call Inferno Squadron or
Inferno Phasma. Squad.
Inferno Squad, correct. And Phasma, villain stories necessarily, because even though the characters at certain points in the story, and in Cardinal's case, the whole story, are on the bad guy's side, they're still going through the same call to action that, you know, a Luke Skywalker might when he was a farm boy in Tatooine. They're just doing it from a different perspective. It's a different way to characterize the same moral conflict of Star Wars, just from a different perspective.
Would you perhaps say from a certain point of view or a different point of view?
I would, but then I might get in trouble for being too cutesy.
Okay, but that's not a pun. We don't mind the cutesy, Jay. Not that cutesy is really a phrase I associate with you. But no, I think you guys both make really good points. And I obviously agree with them 100%. And with that, do we have anything else about Cardinal we would like to bring up?
So would you call Hux and Cardinal your twin sons?
I would not. Oh, I would not. And Jay, you now owe me another insightful thought about Captain Cardinal.
Nope, I'm afraid it's time to go.
Nope. Come on, Jay. Spit it out. This is now what happens. Every bad pun you make, you have to give me something insightful about the main discussion.
Way to go, Jay.
See, but the only thing I can think of are other puns.
That sounds like a personal problem to me.
Bria, like to this way leads madness.
Like how he wanted to be the poster boy for the First Order, but it's Phasma instead.
I mean, you're not wrong.
So that counts then.
Brian?
Close enough.
Okay. All right. Any other real last thoughts that are not puns before Jay, before you get yourself in trouble?
There should be a Poe Dameron spiritual successor comic series in which Cardinal crosses paths with the remnants of Black Squadron.
Ooh. I'm all for it. Jay, do I dare ask you?
No, my mouth is shut.
You just opened it.
I had to tell you that it was shut. You couldn't see that through my microphone.
Okay, fine. All right, I'm trying to think if I've got anything else besides telling Jay to not make puns. I guess the only thing I would say is that, yes, my love for the First Order originated before this book, and I'm still not sure how that happened. Force Awakens did something very weird to both me and Jay. If you'd asked me 5 years ago and you told me that, hey, Bria, you are going to one day want to cosplay as a 40-year-old man who is a stormtrooper, I would have told you were crazy. And yet here we are. Captain Cardinal, thank you for this, Delilah Dawson. I may or may not say uncomplimentary things when I'm having to paint and cut and form this armor to myself next year. But I promise they're said lovingly. So, yeah. I think that's it.
That is it.
All right. So, join us next episode in January when we will be talking about I Have No Idea. If any of you think I got through planning this podcast past December, you would be very wrong. Like I said before, we're not going to talk about Kaz until at least the end of season one of Resistance. We have a sort of idea of what we'd like to talk about that's not a character focus, that if you are in our Tosche Station Patreon, you might have gotten a sneak preview of earlier today. But seriously, tell us what Asian characters in Star Wars you'd like to hear us talk about. If there's other Star Wars Twitter people, Asian Star Wars Twitter people, you'd like to have us be guests on the show who you think would be great to talk about a certain character, let us know. We'd certainly like to. I mean, there's plenty of other characters to cover. I definitely want to talk about Sen at some point. I want to talk about Carice. We're going to come to Paige Tico at some point when any of us can stop, you know, watch the first opening of the movie and not cry about her. But yeah, help us, Kanji Kaz listeners, your only hope. And I would say usually to let us know if you have any questions you'd like us to answer in a future episode. But we don't know what we're talking about yet. So on that super awkward ending note, Brian, it's all yours.
This episode of the Kanji Cast is brought to you in part by you, our Patreon subscribers. That's patreon.com/Tosche Station. $1 a month gets you into the Patreon exclusive Slack, where as you can see, we source a lot of things we talk about on this show. We are part of the Tosche Station Network. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles at Tosche Station. Bria is at Chaos Bria. Jay is Admiral Jello. I'm Lane Winry, LaneWinree. You can find this show on the Tosche Station Radio Mega Feed in the iTunes Store, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. You can find our columns and news at ToscheStation.net, as well as all of our other podcasts. Thanks for listening to another episode. We'll catch you all next month.